there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball. And for today's All Ball, I thought we'd catch up with an OG. His name's Dimitri Hill. You may remember him, Demeet Hook, at the University of Florida. Remember that 94 team that went to the Final Four? Yeah, Dimitri Hill, Andrew DeClercq was the other big guy. He had some chase down blocks. Anyway, he had a really kind of fascinating upbringing growing up in St. Petersburg, made himself into a star. Slowly earned his way to being a star in college and then had a 15-year career overseas. If you really want to get down to it, if Demeet Hook was coming out of Florida today, there's a guy who said, hey, if he would drop a little weight and work on his three-point shot, he'd be a Draymond Green type. And he was a tremendous passer, an outstanding low-post scorer, and long arms, big hands, but kind of one of those undersized bigs with long arms. Today, small ball five. So I want to get into that, and you'll hear his journey. All the different places he played, all the different coaches he played with. I thought you'd enjoy it. Well, without further ado, here's Demeet Hook.
So before we get to your career and your travels and how well known you are, you first started playing basketball. You can paint the picture. Youth center. High school, what was your first memories of basketball?
First memory of basketball, dad took me out. I was maybe 10, and he was coaching the basketball team, actually. And then, so he was coaching his team, and then, so I was just in the gym. And, you know, he never tried to influence me to play any sport. And then, so I just picked up the ball, and then just started running up and down with the other kids, and it was fun. And then so we got back in the car, and he asked me, he was like, you want to play basketball? You want to become pretty good at it? And I was like, yeah. So that weekend, it was a Saturday, and he took me out to the park, you know, outside courts, you know, which they don't play outside anymore these days. The kids won't know what I'm talking about. But and then he just taught me how to drop step left and right. So I had to learn how to use my left hand and my right hand. And then so after that, it took off from there. So I fell in love with the game. And then every day after that, it was basketball.
What was the outdoor park? What was it called?
Oh, Wildwood Community Center, right there in St. Pete, right? Still there today. It's a great place. A lot of the best basketball players from Pinellas County, Tampa, Hillsborough, Manatee, you know, they have come through there because, you know, they throw a lot of great tournaments and all the best high school players. Then they used to have the Pro-Am League back in the day there. You know, Matt Geiger played in there a lot. And so, you know, that was just where you go to see if you really had game. And so, you know, I was 14 playing an adult men's Pro-Am. And so that right there at that moment, I knew I was at least going to college to play, you know, basketball.
What was your dad like with you? Like, I understand he taught you the basic fundamentals, but was he hard on you? Did he coach you growing up? Like, what was that relationship like?
He coached me. He coached me till I got in eighth grade. And yeah, he was definitely hard, but he was fair, you know. And then when I got to about seventh grade, I actually told him, I don't want to play for him anymore. You understand? And you know, him, you know, being a good man, he's like, okay. And then so he's like, who you going to play for? So then he cut off the coach mode and then he went into the dad mode. And then so he's like, okay, yeah, they do a good job over there. You go play over there. Have no problem with that. And, you know, ironically, we played against them in the championship and beat them. And so that was a great ride home for me, you understand? And then so after that, you know, he had a different level of respect for me, too, because I was growing up and growing into my own person. And then when I did decide to play for him again, he was a little different. He wasn't as hard. But he saw that I took the game seriously and I did everything he asked me to do. And he just started, you know, saying it a different way. So yeah, that was pretty good.
You were always a post player?
Always a post player. But you know, with my dad, he just told me if I'm gonna play on the basketball court, I should be able to do everything. So that's where the shooting came from. That's where the ball handling comes from. That's where, you know, running the floor and the IQ passing and all that. So, you know, that started at an early age.
It's interesting, though, because I'm sure you watch now and you're like, I was born too soon, right? Because, I mean, you're a small ball five right now. I mean,
now would have been my time because it's more about skill than, you know, pretty much athleticism. Because, you know, you see a lot of guys, you know, like a Draymond Green or Williams from Boston, you know, those guys that fit that mold that, you know, was similar to my skill set as well. So, you know, it's good. It's good the game has evolved. And now you have to be skilled more than just athletic.
You also don't have to be, you know, 6'9", 6'10", to play in the post, right? Like those guys are like, they're like dinosaurs. They're relics of the past.
Yeah, big man has definitely faded out. But you still have dominant bigs. And if you're a dominant big that can play and you're skilled, you will make a lot of money in today's basketball game, for sure. There's nobody out there tall as you. So you definitely have all the skills and plus the length and the height. And, you know, you're in good shape. You know, kudos to the bigs out there that's still doing it, like the Joker and Embiid and, you know, Kirkic up in Portland. I like his game. And then my man that used to play for Orlando, now he's in Chicago, Vucevic.
Yep.
He has a nice game, too. So
all those foreign bigs, all those foreign bigs that are just more skilled, you know?
I mean, you know. These American kids now, they gaming. You know, they have other outlets. You know, they still playing football now. The football is still the sport. But as far
how do you grow up? I mean, for real though, how do you grow up in St. Pete, right? Prime football country, and most people look at you and go like, man, that's a left tackle, that's a defensive end, that's a Hall of Fame, and hoop was your thing. I know your dad coached it, but how did you avoid the football thing?
I'm gonna tell you this, and it's the only reason that I didn't play football is because for my age and my size, you know, I was just too big. I couldn't have never made the weight. So, and then back then, it's not like now when, you know, these big kids, they just put an X on their helmet and put them on the line, or they have, you know, from one league. They had different leagues and things now that, you know, helps these kids that, you know, were like myself growing up. And so that just pushed me to play basketball because, you know, I was grown man size. So I went and played with grown men. And then when I got to high school, then it was a wrap. So I got my first letter from the University of New Orleans as a rising ninth grader. And then, yeah, college was my destiny after that.
Why Florida?
Tell you like I told Patrick Young. I went to the practice. And I knew I'd go there and play right away. So I didn't worry about the competition in front of me. I didn't worry about who they were bringing in. I knew I was going to compete. And then, you know, one thing that we say in St. Pete and pretty much everywhere else, you know, the cream rises to the top. And so eventually, you know, because I put the work in, you know, Lon Kruger was he was a tough coach, but he was fair. So if you put the work in, you did the time, and that's, you know, what I had to learn as a freshman at UF, you know, to put the work in, because like in high school, you know, I was the man, but had to get humble my freshman year. And then, you know, he put me on the bench, but I was killing in practice. You understand? We used to beat the first team all the time, but you know, they were seniors and juniors. So, you know, they were there. He was loyal to them. But then when my time came, I didn't let it go.
That Final Four run in 94, I remember being in Charlotte. But you guys had an awesome team, right? You had Dan Cross, you had DeClercq, yeah. You had Kelf. In that season, did you know you guys were going to be that good?
No. But what brought us together that year is before that Final Four season, we took a tour trip over to Australia. And so we played all the pro teams in Australia, which had, you know, Rodney Moreau, Dwayne McClain, Kenny McClary, and a few others. And so we knew we were going to be pretty good if we could compete against them.
So, but that team, it was super unique, right? It was, Florida wasn't known as a huge basketball program. You know, you had Dwayne Schintzis in the past and some other dude, but not really known. But you guys were fun. You guys were athletic. You guys were unique. Now, what do you remember about that ride?
The thing was, it was so unexpected that every game was a new step. We went to a new tier. You understand? And coach, damn, it's amazing. I still remember it. And coach always talking about, you know, building rungs until we complete the ladder. You understand? So, you know, we had to go to, you know, for 1 month. When we went to Hawaii, you know, we wanted to be good there. We wanted to, you know, that sucked. I like Oklahoma State, but Louisville gave it to us pretty good. But, you know, we upset Oklahoma State and Big Country. And so, That was a great game. That game right there really put me on the map as far as the national attention went. And then I had a great game against Louisville as well. And so then it was it after that. And so, you know, I came prepared for that season, and I was unexpected, and didn't nobody expect that type of play from me. And then so now I'm getting all the attention. And then so now my other teammates, they started beating off that too. And then, so, you know, they wanted some of that attention as well. And then, so they stepped their game up. And then we just competed to be pretty much great every day. And then, so it was fun. That out of all the basketball I played, and even the championship over in Europe, that was fun. That was actually the most fun I've had playing basketball.
When did you originally, now, have you always been called the Meat Hook? Or was that just during that run? Like, when did that
happen? Actually, caller called in on the Larry Vitale show, and then they dubbed it, you know, because R.C. Buford was our assistant coach. Go figure. He the GM for the world champion San Antonio Spurs, and he was in my ear, you know. I can tell you this, like my freshman year, I met with Coach Kruger probably 2, 3, 4 times a week. My sophomore year, maybe once a month. So RC was the buffer. He definitely was the glue and was the secret ingredient that got us to that point because, you know, he worked us. He made it fun. We showed up early, stayed late. He protected us. He did everything. And then so he told me, he would be like, Coach Kruger, you know, want you to shoot your hook shot a little more. So I was like, that's it? He was like, yeah. And then so one game, I think I was 10 for 11 shooting hook shots. So, I mean, and then after that, called in and called it the meat hook. And then so it just stuck. And I'm just mad I didn't have the wherewithal when I was 19 years old to copyright that name. Yeah, oh, trademark and everything. So
Can you especially with like name, image, and likeness now? Like you had a big personality. You had a big game. Right? You had Florida, a huge school. I mean, just imagine the meat hook and trademarking and NIL today and what you would have been able to capitalize on.
I would have pulled up to the game in a rocket ship. I'd have pulled up to the game in a spaceship. I'm telling you. Then all the jerseys they sold, my 35 jersey and everything. Not just me. Dan had them. Andrew had them. Craig had them as well. So it'd have been a plenty for everybody to go around. But I'm just glad they got it right in a way. But now they got to figure out how to control it because, you know, some of these kids coming in there, you know, making a ton of money right now. And then they making more money than the coaches. So I can see where that could be a problem.
Well, I also think that part of it is the issue is if you're paying a guy before he ever plays, right? One, that's not really the idea of NIL. The idea of NIL is you ball out, you make a name for yourself, you're able to benefit off of it immediately, right?
Yeah, right.
But the other part to it is that as you experienced, right, when you get there, you don't always play right away. And so what happens is these kids, they either the coaches feel forced to play them because they're how much money they're getting, okay?
Right.
Which older players like, why am I still around here? And if they don't play as well as they think, then they transfer out before they ever actually live up to that billing, and it becomes a vicious cycle. It's not the idea of not compensating a kid for name, image, likeness, but how do you create kind of a fair, balanced way to do it? That's the hard part.
And then how can it be a fair market value when if I'm finna go to play football at Alabama, you understand? I know I'm about to make millions of dollars or at least half a million. And then if I come down to say Troy, College of Troy, you understand?
Yeah.
Like that is not going to be an equal playing field and they're not going to be able to offer as much as one of those big schools. So, you know, I don't know if it have to be a cap or anything like that, but, you know, it's in the infancy stages. So a lot of people are going to make a lot of money in the beginning and then they'll figure it out later.
You get done playing at Florida.
Right.
What was the pre-draft process like? What was the, cause everybody has the goal of being in the league. What were people telling you? What was the process like for you?
So my thing was everybody's telling me I'm getting drafted, you know, it's going to be second round, which, okay, I'm cool with it. But, went out to, San Antonio, went out there with RC and they had a great workout with them. I was out there for a couple weeks. So we went through everything. I destroyed everybody. And RC, you know, San Antonio didn't have a draft pick that year in 96. So he was like, well, if you don't get drafted, I'll invite you, you know, to the camp. So I was like, okay, got that in the bag. Then so after that, went down to, I call it the torture chamber on South Beach, working with the Pat Riley, did his camp. And that was, That let me know right there that level of just training for the NBA was something different. Because even now, you know, Riley stuff is legendary. And even though, you know, Spoelstra took some of that over, but that measuring the body fat and weighing every couple of days and all that, and then, you know, getting your nutrition right and everything, it's real down there. And he runs you to death. So that right there. I knew I wanted to make it Miami Heat team because they only had two spots and it was 45 people. So the experience was great.
I was in a camp, a Lakers camp with Isaac Austin. And I remember him talking about the Heat. Yeah. He was like, yo, one preseason with the Heat took 3 years off my career. That's what he said.
But if it wasn't for the Heat, he wouldn't have never been in the league because I was at that camp with Isaac Austin. You understand? So they had him in shape. He was there before anybody got there. So we knew one of those spots was going to him.
Yep.
And then so everybody else was going to put one more spot because they invested a lot of time in him. We got him to lose weight and he looked great. And then after he, you know, had them a couple good seasons in Miami, then he came to Orlando, and then, you know, when it was downhill from there because Orlando has great restaurants and they gave him a lot of money to come up there, so he was going to get it anyway. So they didn't put a weight clause in his contract, and then so the rest is history with that.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
What was it like for you to try and manage your weight?
It was, I can tell you this, it was easier to manage it in Europe than it was when I was home. Because in Europe, the food is different. They don't put as much things in the food and you don't eat as much meat all the time over there, you understand, as we do over here in the States. And just the whole culture and lifestyle over there, it is not built around food. You understand? Like, this side, you know, Americans over here, we eat a lot of meat. And then, so that's what I used to notice when I used to come back from my travels, is how bad we eat over here. And so, of course, I'm from here. I love food, love steaks, love all that. So, you know, in the summertime, I would work out 3 times a day, watch what I ate. But then once I got through playing Doug, it was tough.
They don't have the snacks like we have, right? Like here's always something you can stop and get and snacks or whatever. Like, yes, the meals are generally healthier, but I mean, the snacks is what really gets you, you know?
Right. And then over there, you're not eating preservative bread and everything. You get fresh bread every day. So you got to go to your bakery. You understand? You're not buying, you know, like they don't even sell like Wonder Bread and things like that, you know, only certain times. So it's just the whole lifestyle and eating a lot more salads, a lot more soups. Because when I was in Slovakia, I think I ate soup every day.
Your first team overseas was Hapoel Tel Aviv, right? So you go, you're 2 years old?
22, yes. Just left UF.
So you're 22. You want to play in the NBA. You don't. You go to Israel to play in Hapoel Tel Aviv. A dude from St. Pete who's been in Gainesville. What do you remember about that first experience?
It was pretty well. The first thing I remember was how long the flight was. I was like, damn, where is Israel? You understand? Like, we are really flying to the Middle East. Like, damn. And then you on LL, you understand? That's the only airplane going into Israel, you know, at that time. You understand? So now the flight was great. And then you know, then everybody on the airplane would tell you the history of LL, and it has never, you know, had an accident or anything like that. And so you know, that was the, and the, it was a culture shock. But the great thing was, is everybody spoke English. So I didn't have a difficult time adjusting. And then the one thing that I did love about Israel is that everybody is knowledgeable about sports. Like a lot of people, because when Daron Sheffer was played in UConn, we played UConn. And so they remember me from that game that we beat UConn to get to the Elite Eight down in Miami. So, you know, and over there, they up at 2 a.m. out on the beach, over on Allenby Street, you understand, having a party. So, yeah, it didn't take long to get adjusted, but, you know, the food, it took a minute to get adjusted because I did not like hummus. Yeah.
Is it every meal? They put it every meal.
And then I was like, then we come back to the States and then I see hummus. But I was like, that is not the real hummus. You understand? Like, I don't think you would eat the real hummus because it doesn't taste like anything. Like, you know, it's no flavor, it's no garlic, it's no nothing.
How'd you manage the nightlife, right? Like, it's Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv's a good time. But now you're also a professional athlete. Like, how hard was that first year out?
Not going out the night before the games. You understand? Just being disciplined with it. It was tough. You understand? Then I had to get my routine. And I can't never say I didn't go out some nights before the game. But I just put it like this, Doug. I was like, if I'm out the night before the game and the whole city knows it, then when I show up at the game, I got to play my ass off, because if I don't, that's going to be the reason that they use that I didn't play good, because I was out. And I might not have been out till midnight, but midnight turns into 4 o'clock real easy.
How did you do with the coaching? Because Israeli coaching it's a little bit like college coaching in that they think they're the boss, right? It's not like real professional basketball where players kind of have a say a little bit, right? But they also, they don't have the R.C. Bufords to kind of bridge the gap there, right? They don't. How did you handle that?
Well, my first coach, Mayor Kaminsky over there at in Hopewell, he was like, look, he was like, you're not in college anymore. He was like, we bring you here to win games and score points. He was like, you are an American. So he just gave me, you know, a brief overview of how I'm looked at on the team as if I'm the man. And then, so I just took the ball and ran with it. And then he's taught me one phrase, in Israel that I used when I was over there. And it was, Tenli Kadu. That was like, give me the ball.
Yep.
So, that's it. That was it. So I was like, yeah, all right, I'm home. And then I had a great season. I mean, led the league in scoring. We finished at the bottom, but, you know, kept them in there. And then I even got all my money that first year. So that was rare. And then, it's some stories in Israel and they all true about that money. But,
good question.
Yeah.
So you get done. Why France the next year?
They called my agent. My first question was, who is my point guard? And then so they like, we got Jerry McCullough. And so me and Jerry played together at Portsmouth.
I know
Ice. And then so I was like, oh, me and Ice. I was like, well, with Ice, I know I'm going to win some games. And then so once again, we went to Graveline. And Ice actually was the MVP of the league that year. And then so I had a very good season as well. And then they wanted to bring me back to Graveline after that. But Ice wasn't coming back. And then so Eisenberg got on the phone with my agent and said they wanted me back in Israel. So my third year, I went back to Israel. But it wasn't as good as my first year. So team wasn't as good. We made a lot of changes. Johnny Newman was the coach. So he was like the only American coach in Israel at that time. Well, no, David Blatt too, but, you know. But
he's essentially an Israeli.
So, Right, right. But he got fired. And then they brought in Ronnie Bassani. And he was a good coach. He was a very good coach. I wish we probably would have had him at the beginning. You know, we would have won some games and it'd have been more disciplined and not as chaotic as when Johnny was there. Because Johnny was, whoo, Johnny Newman was, he was out more than we were. So, and then, you know, come to the game and he was still living in his glory days when he was scoring 40 points in the SEC. So, you know, we had to hear all those stories and how he coached in Greece and everything like that. So, you know, that was, I liked him as a person, but as a coach, he was terrible. But as an assistant coach, he would have been great because he drilled you to death. And then, so that made me better as well. Like just working with him for those couple months he was there, all the drills we did, just him and he and I, that helped my game as well. You know, just catch and shoot, especially with the catch and shoot part. I became a better catch and shoot person working with Johnny.
Why'd you return to the States? Why go to the CBA?
That was the quickest way to get to the league back then, was to go to the CBA.
You thought you had 2 years overseas, you really worked on your shooting. You know, now all of a sudden you can kind of establish yourself.
And then Sioux Falls was calling. So I had a good chance. I was over there and Sioux Falls was a great look. I mean, starting, putting up numbers, you know, getting looks, and then ripped my groin. And then so that put me on the shelf for about a whole summer. And then so I tried to come back. I tried to come back during the playoffs and wrap it up. But, you know, my groin, I had to heal. So I took time off after that. And then once I healed up, before the summer season started in Europe, I went down to Venezuela, you understand, because yeah. I was sitting around for 3 months. And then so my agent got me a deal down in Venezuela. Then so I was able to, you know, heal up and go down there and play very well down in Venezuela, which is a fun league.
Yes.
It's
wild, though, right?
It's a dangerous country, but it's fun at the same time. It is wild.
So, okay, so give me the mental image. Like, what's your – I know it's a spring league. Guys can go down there and make a good amount of money in a short period of time.
Yeah.
It's good talent down there. But as you said, it's dangerous. So, like, paint the picture. I mean, what was your apartment like? Did you walk to the gym? How much – was there crime everywhere? Like, what was it really like?
Okay, we everything was gated and barred up. So you're not going in through anything without gates and bars, even on the window. And we did not walk to practice. We had drivers. So if we wanted to go anywhere, we had drivers. They stayed down at the bottom of the building 24 hours a day. So anywhere we wanted to go, they drove us. And then, you know, around our apartment building, because all the players stayed in one apartment building, the owner owned the building, so pretty much all the team lived there. But, you know, you had little cafes and bodegas and little restaurants and stuff around the area that we would frequent a lot. But pretty much we had people with us all the time, even when we went clubbing. They would take us there, you understand? And then, you know, no issues or anything because, you know, a lot of people get caught up in, you know, the nightlife and the atmosphere over there is conducive to whatever you want to do. And then, so if you're not careful, you get caught up in it and it can go south really quick. And I've seen it, you understand? So a lot of players, you know, come over there and then in 2 weeks they gone and you're like, why? And then, so that's why, because they can handle the situation because the women are amazing. Yes. And then the money, like you say, the money is good and everything is cheap over there. So, you're living a good life, and then you rarely have to pay for anything because they fed us twice a day if we choose to eat, you know, at the facility where we practice that. You know, our local team mates, they ate there. But, you know, sometimes, you know, we didn't eat there, but it was the option. And then they sent all our money home to our bank accounts. They gave us per diem per day, so we didn't have to really spend any money. And then so... a couple of my teammates spoke fluent Spanish, So that helped a lot too. And then I learned the language. And then so it was a good time from there. And then so that got me back in shape too, to get back into Europe. And then so I also made some good money. And then, you know, got to the finals. And then down there, you play everybody. Like, you would play three times in a weekend. You understand? So it would be hard because you would go down there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But by the time you got to Sunday, you really didn't want to play the other team, or they don't want to play you either. So it depends. Like, you're going to beat them twice, they're going to win the third game. Or if they done beat you twice, then you got to win the third game because you don't want to deal with the owners not paying. So, you know, Venezuela was cutthroat, but it was good.
You play in the ABA. What was it like to play at home in Tampa? Now you're playing in your hometown. That sounds challenging as well.
And I played for Darryl Dawkins. So that was a great experience. And once again, I was doing my thing. The ABA, and then they were paying a good lot of money at that time as well. And then I'll never forget this play. It was just going up for a rebound. And it was me and Benoit Benjamin. And I was giving him the business that whole game. And so he made a dirty play, and he hip-checked me. But he's 7 foot. So when he hip-checked me, I should have fell to the ground. But, you know, the pride, like, ain't finna knock me down. And then it resulted in a herniated disc. So I finished the game, had a good game. But after that, I couldn't walk for, like, 2 months. And then I had to be in rehab, and I did a lot of stuff in the pool and injections and everything like that. So my season pretty much over after that play. But the ABA was great. Being home was great. I got to see my family. They got to see me play a few games. I had my family down with me because, you know, they didn't have to travel to Europe and go through the airports. And with small kids at that time, you know, that was good. We lived in Tampa. So, you know, everything was good. I mean, it was good. It's just too bad they couldn't keep that one going, because a lot of players from that, you know, got jobs, and some of them even went to the league from the ABA. So, you know, it's many ways to get there. It's just all about time and an opportunity.
So you have to go. You go back overseas. Where'd you go next? Yeah.
I went to China, actually. Then after the ABA, I went to China, and then that was culture shock. You understand? Like, I never ever really could imagine what a billion people look like, but there's people everywhere in China. Like, you get no privacy, no peace, 24 hours a day. People are always in the street. We went up to training camp, and we had training camp up in the mountains for like a month. And then, but it was 5 million people in the village. You understand? So it was not like it was a small city, but that was overcrowded as well. And then but then when you come down from the village, you down into the main city. So we was on the border. We was in Guangzhou. So that was like South China, and then right across from Hong Kong. So we was able to go to Hong Kong, and that was when it was still under British rule. So we had to get a visa and everything to go to Hong Kong because it was still under British rule. But I think that next year they had to give it back. So it was like after 100 years, they had to give it back to China. And then but they still own all the banks. So it's pretty much still Britain.
What was it like playing there?
It was crazy, chaotic, barbaric, actually. But they give you a lot of money. But the Chinese, and you better be able to fist fight, because you will get sucker punched. And yeah, I still got scars from the Chinese basketball league. But yeah, it's one time was enough, and we did not ever want to do it again. A lot of Americans go over there and they get thrown out of the league for fighting, because they're gonna hit you. There's no ifs, ands about it. They're going to sucker punch you. They're going to do everything they can to take you out of your game. And if they get kicked out, so be it. They would love to get rid of the American for one of the Chinese local players.
What was the weirdest food you tried in China?
Octopus, and it was alive.
Wait, what?
Octopus.
A live octopus?
It was alive. They brought it out. It was still moving. And then, so, you know, I chopped up the little tentacles, and then I ate a little piece. But that was it. But, yeah, that was the Chinese food over there is definitely different than what we experience over here. That's real Chinese food in Asia. This over here is American Chinese food. That is pretty much trash.
I know you played back in France. Actually, we played against each other in France. And then you went to Slovakia as well?
I went to Latvia first. After France, I went to Latvia. And that was, I played with Andris Biedrin. He was 17, 18 years old. And he was a pro then, but, you know, that was fun. Bill Duff shut him down before the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so that could have been my first championship, but of course, we lost to Vince Bills in the finals, but, that was a great experience.
Somebody who hasn't been to Latvia, what was that like for you?
Latvia was an unexpected surprise. That's like a diamond in the rough over there. And we were in Riga, so we was in the capital. And in that country, the ratio for men to women is like 7 women to 1 man. And all beautiful. So that was, and then the money was shit. But I took that opportunity because it was a EuroLeague team. And so I took a step back to, you know, propel my career a little further because I destroyed the Euro Cup.
Yeah.
And then so the FIBA Cup or whichever it was, was an all-star in that. And then so that carried me on for the rest of my season. That's just 1 year playing in Latvia for like $8,000 a month. And which was less than I was making in Orleans. Well, we played against you when you was down in Clermont.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was some great times, but Latvia was good. I still have friends over there to this day I talk to. And then after that, we went to Cyprus. And then Cyprus was another country with barbaric basketball.
When you say barbaric basketball, it wasn't. When you say barbaric basketball, what do you mean?
Yeah,
just deep shots.
Okay. Nah. These from the fans. The play was great, but these fans, like, they would spit on you. They would throw. Like, for instance, I was doing a timeout. My coach, he was talking to us, and he had on his Armani suit, and it's a big game. And he's just sitting down, talk to us, and all we see is spit coming from the crowd, all on his face, on his suit, and just sitting there taking it. I was like, man, are you crazy? And then they throwing the drums, like we go on a run and we beat a good team. They throw the drums on the court, then they'll run the court if the referee make a call they don't like. You understand? Like, we have stopped games and had to come finish them the next day. So, yeah, Cyprus was a one and done, but it was fun because the island itself, the country itself, very beautiful. I was in Nicosia, so on the the Cypriot side, but that city is split between Turkey and Cyprus. So the other side of Nicosia is Turkey. And then that was the first time they opened up the border where you could pass going back and forth because a lot of the, I'm going to say, Bulgarian people lived on the Turkish side but worked, you know, they did all the, like, the cleaning jobs and everything like that for the on the Cypriot side, which is very clean and pristine and it's a lot of money in Cyprus. So I had a good time there, but but the basketball, it was okay. It was so-so.
And then you went to Slovakia?
After Cyprus, I went to Portugal. And then I was on the island of Madeira, and Portugal was fun. But we had too much fun in Portugal, and then we lost a couple of our best players because they got kicked off the team. And then that hurt us in the playoff. But we had a good run in Portugal. That was a great experience.
What did you do to get kicked off the team? What do you mean too much fun? What did they do?
Well, our owner was the CEO of the major airline in Portugal. And so my teammate, Kenny Younger, we went out one night after the game. We beat Porto and Porto, or we beat one of them. We had a big win. And then so he got super, super drunk. And then so the next morning he woke up, he was still drunk. And so he got on the airplane drunk, and oh my God, he showed his ass. And then so he got kicked off the airplane. You understand? And then when he got back, so that's embarrassing. Not only the club, but it's embarrassing the president of the club because he's the CEO of the airline.
Right.
So needless to say, when he got back, he was gone. And he was the MVP of the league. So I was the leading scorer, but he was the MVP of the league. So we lost him, and then we can never recover after that. We were still good, and we replaced him with good players. But I think we had Levi Austin. He was a good player. And then Kim Adams, and I forget the other one, but wasn't Kenny. And then so we lost in the second round to a man from Kentucky, Muhammad.
Nazi Muhammad?
Hashimu Evans.
Hashimu Evans, yeah, he was Manhattan and then Kentucky. He was a bad boy.
Yeah. So we lost Hashimu. And then, you bring back a lot of memories, Doug. But
that's the whole idea. You also have an unbelievable memory for all these guys you play with and coaches you play with.
Right.
So what was the best part about Portugal?
The food. I lived over off a mountain. So I was in Madeira on the island of Funchal. So that was nice. And it was all touristy. So you got a lot of, international flavor on that island. So that was good. I had a great time there. I wanted to go back, but they didn't want to bring me back because they couldn't control me. But on the floor, I gave them everything I had. And the next year, Porto wanted to sign me, which Scott Stewart, my college teammate, he played there. And then so I was like, okay, we can go there. But then my ex-teammate from Portugal, he was in Slovakia. And he was like, how much money you got to get in Porto? So I told him, then he was like, we got that plus some more in Slovakia. I was like, where? Then he's like, Slovakia, man. He said, you come here, you will destroy the league. Then so I was like, by this time, I'm at the end of my career. So I say I got about 3 more years left at high level. And then so I was like, well, have them call my agent. We'll see. So I'm sitting on the deck out on Treasure Island Beach. And so I get the phone call. And then he was like, yeah, this serious right here. They saw your tape. And they say you what they need, and they going to pay for it. So they brought me there. I played for Lubomir Urban. He's a Slovak legend coach. He won more championships over there than anybody. And so I played for him. He's a good coach. He's a coach, though. You understand? So
yeah.
I respected him. I respected how he ran the team. And I played for him for 4 years. But then we won the championship over there. We went to the playoffs every year. I left it on the floor for him. No complaints from Slovakia. That was a good time.
What is that like though? To you're living a lifestyle for a decade of different team every year, sometimes two teams in a year.
Right. Then at the end, to play for the same team and to play for the same coach for multiple years, did you like that better? That seems amazing, because because the hardest part about it is not necessarily the playing. It's the something new. You got, like, it's a completely new lifestyle, new diet, new places. What was that like to do the same thing for four straight years?
It was actually stability. You understand? Because I was signed before I go home for the next season. You understand? So I was the MVP over there, I want to say twice. And then the third year we won the championship. And then the fourth year we went back to the finals. Then so we had a nice run. And then so I would always sign, you know, before I leave for the next season. And then at that point, you know, as long as the money wasn't ridiculous, I'd be all right. You know what I'm saying? So I wasn't there for the money. I just there for the longevity, trying to figure out what I'm going to do after I get done playing basketball. So, so that gave me the incentive, you know, to stay in shape while I was home and not eat all this stuff over here. Then keep my workout going. And then of course, they give you money when you go home too. You understand? For the, you know, so you can, you know, train and do all that other stuff too. So that was in the contract as well. And then, so it just kept me, you know, it kept me going for my last 5 years. For my last 5 years, I played on, I was in Nature. Then I played my last season, I was in Levisa. But then that was it. I was done after that. I knew going into my last year that I should have quit the year before. But as a person once told me, it's better to quit too late than too soon. So, you know, I was done.
So your last game?
It was a win. It was around January, because I didn't even finish the season. The reason I went back to Slovakia was the woman I was seeing at the time, you know, she was there, and then, you know, we had big plans and everything. So I went back just for her. And then a good friend of mine, he was GM over at the in Levica. So he was like, just come play for me for the whole year. And then that's that. So I signed a contract. But then in January, then I was done. I didn't even want to go to practice. I didn't want to play. I'm catching attitude. Then I just told him, I was like, I appreciate it. I was like, but I'm done. So by February, I came home early. And then, you know, my fiance at the time, she came a few months later. And then what I did after that, because I didn't graduate from UF before I left, I went back to finish up my fall semester. I only had one semester left to get my degree. And the great thing was, Jeremy Foley, before I left UF in 96, he was like, look, you only got a semester left. So when you're done playing, come on back and finish up. But ain't nobody know I was going to play 15 years professional. So, but then at the end, when I came back, he honored his word and rolled me back. So I finished up, got my degree. And then, so, hey, I have nothing but love and admiration for the University of Florida, because, you know, they took care of me. And then, so, you set me up pretty nice. And then, so, no complaints, no ill will. I go back all the time. I love my school. You know, we're in transition now. So it's always going to be tough in the beginning, but, it's Gainesville. We'll get it right.
What's that like, that first year, when all you've ever done your entire life is be a part of a team? And now there's nothing to get in shape for. There's no practice. There's no coach. There's no teammates to get to know. What's that first year like?
It's tough. You're getting fat. You're getting out of shape. It's not, if I don't get up today and go run my 3 miles, 4 miles, or nobody gonna care. I'm not gonna hurt nobody. If I eat after midnight, okay. If I want to drink all day, there's no consequences for that. So I had to get thin. If I want to go play golf, I can go do that. And in the daytime, I ain't got to worry about, you know, hitting the weight room or doing this. And then if I want to just stay around and be lazy, nothing, I could do that as well. But the good thing is with that, like, once I finished, I had a summer, and then I went back to school. So I was going to class, you understand? So I was doing something to break up the monotony of the day. And then by that time, my fiance was there. So we got married in Gainesville, actually. And then, so, you know, football season, basketball season. So it was a good time when I went back. And then it was in the fall semester, so I got a little bit of everything. And then, so then after December, I graduated, and then I came back to St. Pete. And then, so I had to get a place to live. Then I had to find out what career was I going to do. So, you know, the obvious choice would be going into coaching. And I'm going to be honest with you, Doug. Yeah, I can't coach these kids. I just can't. It's tough. It's a new generation. And then I was at a private school, you know, Admiral Farragut. And then so these kids, they didn't want to go to practice. They mom, dad called, like, little Timmy got a physics test that he has to study for. And he's overwhelmed with this and that and everything else. Just the normal stuff that we used to juggle because we had to. You know, these kids nowadays, you know, they can't do that because they're cuddled and coddled and entitled and all those things that we had to earn that. You know, they're giving that right away. You understand? You had to earn the entitlement. You had to earn praise. You had to earn, you know, victories. Everybody didn't get a trophy when we grew up. You understand? So, yeah, it's a different time. But the talent is still there. It's just time consuming. And I have a good life away from, you know, from it all. You understand? So I enjoy my free time now. I am a fan of all sports. But it took adjustment. And then the thing was, I didn't have a plan of what I was going to do when I finished. You understand? Because the logically was call one of my friends and get into coaching. But when I tried to do that, I see that's not that easy. And then a lot of coaches don't like to hire ex-players because they don't think the player is going to do the work and put in the hours that it takes to be a good coach. But, you know, if an ex-player comes in and that's what he want to do, then show him the ropes. That's just don't assume that, you know, the worst because he was an ex-player. You understand? Because ex-players have knowledge. We know the game. And we can be definitely an asset to some of these coaches that can't get through to the plate. You understand? Because that's what you, how you win games. You win games, you can be the best coach. Coach K is the great coach. If he didn't have Grant Hill or Patero or Jason Williams and Battier, you know, we probably wouldn't even know Coach K. So yeah,
no doubt, and definitely, and the bridging line of communications is huge. Why not coach overseas? You're so everywhere you go, people like you, and yeah. that mentality is a little bit more aligned with your mentality in terms of a work ethic and earning things. Why not coach overseas?
That is a good one, and then that was what I was going to transition to in Slovakia. I had already set up, but then had to be a citizen for this and then had to go with this. Then it was a lot of hoops to jump through. And then so I was like, well, let me go give me some experience, you know, at home and then I can come back. But then after that, I was just done with the coaching aspect. And then I was like, let's put this degree to work. So, you know, I toured around because I still had money saved up. You know, for my time playing. So I didn't really get a job till shit, 3-4 years after I got done playing. And then so I landed at a company I work for now at St. Vincent de Paul. We help the homeless population, you know, take them off the street, get them housed, and then, you know, help them get jobs and, you know, get them some sense of normalcy and back on, you know, stability. You know, in their lives, you know, after being, you know, homeless for some of them 4, 5, 6 years. So, you know, we deal with families, veterans, you know, all the whole gambit. So it's a rewarding job. I run the rapid rehousing program. So it's not basketball, but I still treat it, you know, like I'm still in the game. I'm out working everybody. I'm here late, you know, here early. Everything is done. Pay attention to detail. So all the things I used to do while I was playing, you know, I just translated that to the work field. And, you know, basketball was hard. This working, you know, working a job, that's kind of easy stuff.
Yeah. It actually is. One of the reasons good companies hire guys like you, guys that were great athletes, because there's a work ethic it takes to make it. It's really the interesting part about what you said about former players with coaches. It's weird. Like, not every former player wants to work. There's no question, right? Especially guys that have tons of cash. They're like, man, I don't want to do this. But most of them, they love ball. Like, the guys that love ball and have a work ethic, those are the guys you want to have around you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the people I want to have. I want to have, you know, people that is not afraid to get their hands dirty. You understand? Like, you know, it's okay. Like, cause I didn't start as, you know, program manager and program supervisor. I started as a regular case manager. So I had to work my way up. But one thing I said was, nobody's going to outwork me. And it was easy, because when I got in there, I was like, all these people lazy in here. You understand? Like, they got all these positions, they sitting around doing nothing. But I was like, let me outwork them. And then stay below radar. And then they'll see my work. And then here comes HR. Got this position open up, and we want you to have it. And here I go. And then, so the rest is history. But, you know, it's still a lot of options up there. I'm getting the itch to get back into coaching. But because now I know more about the culture that I will be coaching. Because coming back from Europe to the States, that was actually a culture shock. You understand? So, yeah, yeah. So, and then, you know, basketball is still going to be the same. I mean, I know it's a lot of small ball, same size players, which is fun. Like, this position is basketball. And that's what it should have been pretty much. I think that's what it's always been. The best players always can play multiple positions. You know, like, Magic can play multiple positions. Barkley can play multiple positions. You know, Michael could play multiple. Scotty, you understand? Like, they were not just, you know, okay, they small forwards, but Scotty plays, you know, small forwards. Scotty plays some point. You know, Michael was, you know, point sometimes. You understand? So, or small forward when they had high impacts in the net. So, you know, it was, it's always been there, but now it's just more noticeable because these guys make so much money. Oh my God. When I heard Draymond Green making $25 million a year, I told my, I called my mother, but I told her you had me way too soon.
No question.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, a couple quick ones before we go.
Yeah.
One, if you could pick one of the countries that you played in to live in, which one would it be?
France, without a question. Love France, love the culture. I tell everybody I became a grown man in France. Just the way they do things, I like. They take time out for themselves. Self-care is very big over there. You know, and everything is done with a little sophistication and class. So, you know, I like that. I put that into, you know, the way I live now. You understand? So that's definitely a place I would stay.
you work with housing homeless people. As somebody, as people, anybody who's listening to this pod is not homeless. What do you know about people who are struggling with homelessness that you wish more people understood, that they got, that you only get because you're actually in contact with all these people?
A lot of the common denominator is, first of all, for pretty much most of them, they in this position because they put themselves in that position. You understand? But the thing is, you have to take mental health into consideration a lot. And I've never, ever been the one to, you know, blame a lot of stuff on mental health, but working in this field, you see a lot of that is relevant and true. And so you definitely have to handle it a lot different than, say, when we were growing up, to be like, just suck it up and get up and go do this. Nah, it's not that simple. So we have to, you know, get them the right resource they need so they'll be able to sustain, you know, permanent housing, you know, once they're out of our program, because we don't have a program. It's just to help them get them back on their feet.
In one country, you would never, if I never went there again, it would be too soon.
Oh no, I don't have pretty much good time in all of them, but I would say Hungary? No, my bad, Romania. Yeah, I'll keep Romania. Yeah, I'm sorry, but yeah.
Too gray. Kind of looks like old school Russia.
Yeah, man, you can see a head floating down the river in Romania. It's wild in Romania. Gypsies everywhere, yeah, man.
How did you handle when they got shady with the money, right? When all of a sudden, because you play 15 years, I'm sure that happened a lot of times. How did you personally handle it?
Not a lot, but it happened to me in Israel and Cyprus. And the way I handled it in Israel, you got to go and sue them, you understand? So you have your agent, then you got to go get a lawyer. And then, so it took me 5 years to get my money, but I got it. But, you know, of course, the lawyer got half of it, but I didn't expect that. So, you know, then you got to fly back for court, you understand? So I had to go back to Tel Aviv like 3 times in that 5 years, and then luckily, one of the times when I played over there in a cup game. So, and then my agent scheduled it like that so I can come in and do my appearance and stuff. Because if not, then I wouldn't have got my money. So, sometimes I used to have to, you know, fly over to Tel Aviv, which, you know, I didn't mind because Tel Aviv is a great town. You understand? So, you know, that was the good part about it. I still had friends there. But, you know, it was an inconvenience because I had to pay for that ticket myself.
Sure. And to get your money, right? You had to pay money right. to get your money.
Yeah.
It's a crazy thing to give to.
And in Cyprus, this was the same way. You understand? So, but the money wasn't as big in Cyprus as it was in Israel. So, you know, Cyprus, that came a few years later, but I didn't even, you know, that was just, you know, pay some bills or something. I didn't get that one till almost when I was in Slovakia, you know, before I retired. So
that how was, did you, there's another question. How did you get paid, you get this money, but you have money to live on while you're there. What's right. The best advice you could give to somebody in terms of managing your money while you're playing overseas?
Send all your money back to the crib. Don't keep about $500 for the month. Buy you some food, buy all the alcohol you need to drink, then just throw all of it back to your account in the States and leave it alone till you're done playing. If it's 5 years, 10 years, or whatever, you appreciate that, because we don't make millions of dollars, but you make $100,000 a year. You can make, you know, $250,000, you know, on some good teams and stuff like that. And if you come in with a big name, you understand, and you play well, you can have longevity in Europe. Which I did, you understand? So, you know, that is definitely something that you have to do, because like I say, you're not making 25 million, you know what I'm saying? But 250K is pretty good. you know, for
sure. And you just stack it until you actually
stack. And then you go get your crib. Then you go get your cars. Then you know you can take care of that woman that you want to. And then you don't have stress. You understand? Because you know life is stress free. You understand? I've been pretty much everywhere I'm gonna go. Seen pretty much everything I want to see. And then so now I'm just enjoying life. Got me, you know, good woman. I'm chilling. We do things together. My kids are grown. I'm a granddad, so you know, I spend time with the grandson. And then I just stay in my lane and stay out of the way. And then I just enjoy this gray hair on my chin and, you know, still keep up with my sports. Me and David Thorpe, pretty good, pretty close still, always. We stay in contact. So he keeps me relevant, you know, with the game and everything changing. And so, you know, beat him, you know, not as often as I would like, but, you know, we still in contact. So I just have, you know, a lot of love for what basketball has, you know, afforded me. And I wouldn't change anything, although I do regret not playing in the league, but it's not a big one. Because I did my thing. Where I got my opportunity to shine, I did it. And then so, of course, you know, during the summertime, there was a couple of teams, you know, Charlotte, it was the Bobcats then, you know, Bernie Bickerstaff and all of them wanted to come play summer camp and summer league and all that stuff. But summertime, that was my time to be with my kids. So I didn't even consider none of that. So if y'all want to be in there, bring me to camp. I don't want to come in and play summer league. I don't want to do all that there. If you want me to come, bring me to camp, then that's a different story. So because, like I said, Doug, I was already signed for the next season before I leave. So I already had a gig, so I was comfortable. And then that was the only thing I would say is I got too comfortable in Europe.
That's okay. Yeah. If that's a bad thing and it lasted 15 years, you know, because other guys, right, they come and they chase it and, you know, they're never comfortable anywhere. Right? They're constantly chasing that NBA dream.
Right, right. And then, you know, had, you know, as the time went on, you know, 15 years, you have, you know, all Americans coming through. So I went from being the youngster to the vet. And then, so, you know, you got to teach the youngsters how to use a freaking knife and fork. You understand? Like, even your damn fingers, you're a grown man. Like, yeah. So, yeah, it was good. And it just shows you the different cultures and things that people take more important in different places. Because like I tell everybody, I was like, people the same all over the world. They want their kids to do good. They want to have, you know, nice place to stay, nice things, this, that, that. But the only thing is different is pretty much the culture and the politics. You understand? Like, you know, in certain countries, the people run their country. Over here, the government run our country. You understand? So it's like, you know, you see the way the world can work, but you understand why it works in certain places because of, you know, financial means and financial gains and just everything is based on something, but it's all different in every, you know, aspect when you all over the world. You know, it's different in Asia than in, say, Iceland. Then, you know, you go to the UK, which is another place I love, but I hate the food. But, you know, it's then you slide down to France, then over to Germany. So, you know, it's just, oh, everything is good, but you know, the politics just a little different.
Pretty amazing, right? All started in St. Pete when you're 10 years old. You completely saw the world. You played against everybody, and you had a good time doing it. And you're only halfway through life. You still got a whole other half of life to live.
Hey, and it's good. And I do like this part right here because, you know, it molds you into a person. You understand? It takes more than just you living in your surroundings and being comfortable where you are. You have to be uncomfortable. You have to take a chance. You have to go ahead and, you know, like they say, put your nuts on the line. You understand? So, you know, because I could have left UF, went to the post office, been there for 50 years, you understand, and died. You know what I mean? But I chose to do something else. I chose to, you know, be different, be exceptional. And, you know, it's paying off now. So I appreciate it.
D, I really appreciate you joining me. It's awesome to catch up. We got to do it in person. And we got to do
it more often. Yes, sir.
I will make the St. Pete. I'll make the St. Pete sometime this year.
Man, you come on down here, man. We do it big.
Good trip down memory lane if you're a Florida Gator fan or an SEC fan, or just a college hoops fan, right? That was the Arkansas National Championship. Remember Arkansas? Had a game winner, played Duke. Can you think of who the fourth team was? I actually was playing video games with Cherokee Parks, me and Miles Simon, about 5 hours before that national championship game in Charlotte, North Carolina. Haven't been back to Charlotte since. That was also the arena, the old arena by the airport where the Hornets used to play. That was where it was. Well, anyway, thanks so much for listening. Reminder, the Doug Gottlieb Show is daily, 3 to 6 Eastern or 12 to 3 Pacific, iHeartRadio, FoxSportsRadio.com, or on SiriusXM. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.